Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland, a host of Tech Stuff.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, another host of Tech Stuff.
One of these days, we will have a standard way of doing this.
Ridiculous.
Yes.
Unnecessary.
Previously on Tech Stuff, we talked about the history of Amazon.com leading up to and including the dot-com crash.
Which was in the year 2000.
Yep. And so today we wanted to start up where we left off and bring you up to date on what Amazon's been up to. And it turns out it's a whole heck of a lot.
A bunch of stuff.
But let's look back on 2001. Now, 2000 is when the actual dot-com crash was, but the crash wasn't – don't think of it like a crash where suddenly all companies lost value. It was actually more gradual than that. Companies like Amazon saw their stock prices hit a steady decline, and that decline would hit its lowest point, as far as I was able to determine anyway, in mid-2001 when it hit just below $6 per share.
Wow.
Now, keep in mind that in 98, 99, they were looking at $300 per share before a stock split.
And it even opened at the end of its opening day. It was at $23.
So. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, opening day before the company had ever done really anything beyond, you know, it had been an operation for 2 years as a private company, had not turned a profit, raised $54 million at $23 a share. 2001, it weathers the storm of the dot-com crash, if I can mix all sorts of metaphors, and ends up at $6 per share. So this is a tough time. And some companies wouldn't have survived. In fact, a lot of companies did not survive this tumultuous time.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not stop Amazon. In fact, they did
cut costs. They laid off 1,300 employees, closed a distribution facility.
Yeah, they ended up seeking out and forming alliances with what would have traditionally been considered competitors.
Target and also Borders Group.
Yeah, that's two big competitors right there. They also introduced the concept of the, for Amazon anyway, for in-store pickup, where you would order an item on Amazon.com and then go and pick it up at what whichever store actually sold that mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. So they had other alliances, not just with Target and Borders. They had previous alliances with companies like Toys R Us mm-hmm. and also Circuit City, which, you know, had its own sad story, which I guess we could do someday and talk about. Maybe Aww. Instead of just Circuit City, we could talk about all box stores that
yeah.
have suffered. Because now we're seeing the same sort of thing happen with Best Buy.
Right.
Which survived the Circuit City debacle, mm-hmm. but is now struggling on its own. That's neither here nor there.
Sure.
At this point, Target makes these alliances in part to kind of ride out.
Amazon makes these alliances
Thank you.
ride out. I mean, I'm sure that it was, you know, Target was in it for the same reasons.
Yes.
But
no, Target as a traditional retail establishment was not affected as badly with mm-hmm. the .com crash mm-hmm. as web-based companies. So
right.
thank you for correcting me, because that was a definite correction that needed to happen. Target, for its part, they were having trouble. You know, one of the things that made investors kind of wary about Amazon was that its competitors could, in theory, create their own websites.
Right, and start to sell things in these vast numbers that Amazon was enjoying, hypothetically.
Right, directly to their consumers as opposed to partnering with Amazon. But mm-hmm. it was taking a while for that to work, partly because you had these traditional retail establishments that the web space was foreign to them.
Mm-hmm.
That was not where their expertise lay. Mm-hmm. And so to get into that meant that they made a lot of mistakes. They had to work with a lot of companies they weren't familiar with. And it's a slow process, whereas Amazon was coming from the opposite direction. They were looking at...
They already had all these systems in place to categorize and organize
right.
and data to, yeah, about objects.
Exactly. And to handle all the customer mm-hmm. information as well. So, mm-hmm. It was one of those things where it made sense on both parties, because Target could take advantage of Amazon's interface.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon could take advantage of the fact that Target had a lot of stuff that people wanted
uh-huh.
and both companies
and brand
would,
visibility to,
exactly.
to get it out to people.
Yeah.
Sure.
So they both benefited.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah, by the end of the year they had made $3.12 billion in sales.
Yeah.
Which, you know, considering right after the .com crash, that is not bad. And they also reported their first net profit during the fourth quarter of that year. And this is major. This is huge, because, I mean, you know, not only had they survived this terrible crash of 2000, but also for the very first time in their entire history, actually turned a profit.
Yeah, so this is kind of confusing in a way, because you're talking about a year in which they see the lowest stock price mm-hmm. for a share of Amazon stock. The same year they have their first net profit of one quarter. Again, it's just one quarter.
Just one quarter, right.
But yeah, their annual loss was at $149 million for that year.
Oof.
So they're still losing money, mm-hmm. but they're losing it at a slower rate than they were before.
A mere trickle.
Yeah, yeah. So you're talking about a $1 billion industry, but no profit. So, but still, Bezos is in it for the long haul. He's able to hold it together despite all of this, and they move on into 2002. And Amazon continues to diversify and try new things. They mm-hmm. opened some new stores in apparel and accessories mm-hmm. and office products, which mm-hmm. go hand in hand. I know when I'm shopping for slacks, I also often need a stapler.
Of course. Well, you know, also staples make great earrings. Don't do that. No, listeners at home, never listen to me.
Right. So
they also launched Amazon Canada.
Yeah, so the Canadians finally got to shop.
Mm-hmm.
Canadians, I feel your pain as you sit there and think, wait, in that last episode you talked about them launching in France and Japan and Germany and the UK. Yeah, they got around to Canada in 2002.
Especially since they were in Seattle. I mean, you could technically like spit and hit them from where you are.
I think what Canada would do is they would just hop across the border and order things and then hop back across.
Uh-huh.
That's probably not uh-huh. true. Canadians, I know you're all too nice to yell at me. So, also, by the way, if you really want to feel superior, Atlanta lost its hockey team. So really, I'm just envious of Canada. because I happen to love hockey and I no longer have a team to cheer for, and that's sad. Anyway, moving back to Amazon, they also created their they had already created a free Super Saver shipping program.
Right, back in 2000, actually. We missed that point.
Yeah, that was when if you ordered $100 or more, you could qualify for free shipping. Mm-hmm. They had reduced that amount to $25
as of 2002.
Yeah, so this is an effort of them trying to continue to increase sales. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they did not want for that momentum to slow down, because the momentum, frankly, was really all that was keeping that company going at that point.
Right, sure.
They also launched Amazon Web Services. This is one of the things that really helped Amazon as well. This is a back-end thing that a lot of, you know, retail customers would never understand, but corporate customers, it's very important. Amazon Web Services, here's a direct quote from the site. It offers a complete set of infrastructure and application services that enable you to run virtually everything in the cloud, from enterprise applications and big data projects to social games and mobile apps. So
basically what it means is that Amazon took all of these amazing bits of technology and software and infrastructure that they were using to make their own business awesome, and they sold them piecemeal to anyone who was interested in using them.
It's almost like leasing, really.
Leasing, yeah. Not selling, but right.
Yeah, so
leasing the space, leasing the databases, leasing the programming.
This is a part of a conversation that we'll probably have in yet another episode further down the line when we talk about Amazon and its impact in the industry. Because while we're talking about the history of the company right now, and we're talking about some big ideas, it's hard to stress what sort of impact this made. Keep in mind, this is cloud computing and cloud storage before people were even using that term.
Right.
And Amazon, we often think, at least I often think, of Google as being huge with the cloud storage and cloud services. But really, when you look at it, it's Amazon that was a real pioneer in that space when you're talking about big, big names.
Yeah. Not for personal use yet.
No.
They would get into that later.
Right.
But for corporate use.
Yeah. We're talking like major companies using Amazon because, again, just like I was talking about with the retail companies where the web space was unfamiliar territory, you had these other big companies that had the need to support some sort of networked infrastructure or online capability, but it's such a huge investment to do that as a company and to have that, like, you have to have the space to store the servers. You have to have the people trained to maintain the servers. You have to have the right kind of space, because if it gets too warm, the servers shut down. Kind of funny thing about computers. So Amazon was essentially saying, hey, we know it's tough. We do this for a living, so why don't we do it for you?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that ended up opening up a huge business opportunity. They ended up moving on to the next year. We're talking about their first profitable year in 2003.
Wow.
So 2003, they have their first profitable year. They earn $35 million overall. Okay, so
I mean,
their sales, by the way, so they make $35 million. Here's how much they sold. $1.95 billion worth of stuff.
Wow, yeah.
So almost $2 billion in sales, $35 million profit.
Wow! Yeah.
So, not great margins, as it turns out.
It had a crazy holiday season that year. They processed 1 million shipments and had 20 million inventory updates in a single day.
That's big.
That's a bunch.
They also opened up more stores. Mm-hmm. I probably won't be talking too much about all the different stores they've opened.
At this point, it's just more stuff.
I will say that's when gourmet food hit Amazon.
Ooh,
so yeah,
important.
The stomach demands that I mention that. Also, this was the year. Two interesting things, as far as I'm concerned, with Bezos here. One was that he decided to pursue his love of space exploration by funding a startup company called Blue Origin, which is a Seattle-based aerospace company working on private space flight.
Mm-hmm.
He also had a near-death experience that year.
He was in a helicopter, right?
Yeah, he was in a helicopter, and they were essentially scouting locations for Blue Origin, and they were about to take off in this helicopter in a field, I think it was. And while they were starting to take off, the helicopter drifted. The tail hit a tree.
Ooh.
The helicopter began to tilt, and then it ended up flipping upside down and landing in a creek.
Oh.
Bezos, obviously, he survived. But apparently, he said that he was asked, like, did your life flash before your eyes, or did you suddenly have, like, things that you wish you had done? He says, actually, what I thought was, this would be a dumb way to die, which is pretty awesome. Yeah, so... You know, that was a pretty incredible experience. He also said in an interview, this is unconnected with the helicopter issue, but he said in an interview with Business Week, when we can improve our personalization algorithms so that we show something to somebody that they wouldn't have discovered in any other way, and then that product serves them very well, that's something that's incredibly valuable. And that goes back to something I said earlier. I think it was actually in part one of Amazon. This idea of creating algorithms that can predict customer wants and needs and behavior so that you give the customer a really great shopping experience.
Right.
And also in the process, you make more sales.
Mm-hmm.
So it benefits
everyone. Yeah.
So when I go online and I think, I really, really want, to buy that copy of Halo 4. It also says, hey, I see that you really like being bad at video games. Maybe you would also like to be bad at Assassin's Creed 3. And I say, yes, I would. And I add that to the list.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened. although I should point out right now, Assassin's Creed 3 is still in its shrink wrap. I have not finished playing Halo 4 or Borderlands 2, as it turns out.
As of February 1st, kids, both Jonathan and I are lame at video games.
But we have played online at the same time on the same team.
We did. And Matt from Stuff They Don't Want You to Know joined in as well.
Yeah, so we actually had Team How Stuff Works for a while.
Yeah.
We've had one person suggest that we have a tournament of Team How Stuff Works versus Team Twit over This Week in Tech. I don't know if anyone at Twit plays Halo or any other Xbox 360 game, but if they do, it is on like Donkey Kong.
Yes, call us, guys.
Yeah, we'll play.
Anytime.
Iaz, let me know. You know, he's my buddy over there.
But at any rate.
Yeah, so getting back over to Amazon, they also launched a service called A9. Now, A9... had development efforts in five areas: product search, cloud search, visual search, advertising technology, and community question answering. But when it originally launched, it didn't actually go live until 2004, but it was developed in 2003.
Okay.
So this kind of, unless you have something specific about 2003, this kind of segues into 2004.
Segues straight in there.
Okay.
Sure.
So originally, the forward-facing part of A9 was a search portal. So this is kind of competing with Google and Yahoo and other search engines.
Mm-hmm.
But it allowed you to use different filters or search groups. Like, it had over 400 different groups you could search from, and you could choose which groups to include or not include.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very versatile in that sense, although I guess if you're really getting bogged down into it, it could probably take you ages to do a search.
Sure.
But it was discontinued. That part of A9 was discontinued in 2008. Because it just wasn't getting a lot of traction. But a lot of the technology they developed in A9 still powers the search within Amazon itself. So
when you go
to Amazon, you do a product search, that's what's powering that search.
Cool.
It also is being used in other e-commerce sites. So it's not just Amazon that uses that technology. Mm-hmm. Also in 2004, they launched Amazon Theater. They launched more stores. The tsunami, the major tsunami that happened in 2004.
Oh, right. Yeah. They donated, $15.7 million.
Yep. And they offered the ability for users to contribute directly to the American Red Cross,
via Amazon payments.
Yep.
So,
you could end up doing that. So that was a good, show of, community and support.
They also had that year bought, Joyo.com, which became Amazon China. So,
right. Yeah.
So
Joyo.com was it became the largest book retailer in China.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, it was a strong contender, but was not yet the number one.
Mm-hmm.
But did after Amazon bought them.
Huh.
Amazon Theater, in case you're wondering, it was a short film series. And they took the production company. They used the production company that was formed by the Scotts. That's Ridley and Tony. And they produced 5 short films that starred Hollywood actors. These mm-hmm. were shorts that were released over several months, and they allowed users to watch the films and then buy items that they saw inside the film. So,
wow, yes. Direct product placement. Yeah, that's actually really interesting.
It's one of those things you've been hearing about forever, right? Mm-hmm. Like, one of the big promises of web TV was that eventually you would be able to watch a show and say, gosh, you know, the Winchester brothers on Supernatural sure do wear nifty clothing.
I really want that shirt.
I want to look like Dean Winchester. So how do I get that jacket? I've been watching so much of that show, guys. I really have.
I cannot help you there, man.
I went through a Phineas and Ferb stage. It just happens, people. I mean, you just be thankful you didn't get to listen to my Breaking Bad phase. But anyway, yes, so that was kind of the idea. It was sort of a pilot program in a way. Didn't really go that far, but it's
still interesting that they were starting to work with that sort of creative element.
Yeah, and that comes into play again. Mm-hmm. So Amazon's not finished with the creative element by any stretch of the imagination, but this was sort of an early, like, feeling the water kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a little chilly is all. 2005, they introduced Amazon Prime, and I was so happy.
I don't think I got involved in Prime until recently, like maybe 2010.
But... Yeah. Actually, I think that was closer to when I did, too. Mm-hmm.
But it's so good.
Yeah, yeah. So Amazon Prime, for those of you who do not know, it's a program that for a yearly fee, you have the option to get 2-day free shipping on lots and lots of products. Not everything.
Not everything.
Because a lot of the stuff that's on Amazon is not actually offered directly through Amazon. It's mm-hmm. offered through a partner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the companies that partner with Amazon can choose to participate within the Prime
they
program.
They have the option, but it's not a necessity.
Yeah, it's
and
not
so
required.
Therefore, mm-hmm.
So if they do participate, you get 2-day free shipping on stuff, which is pretty cool. You would also later on get access to things like the Amazon Instant Video database mm-hmm. for certain Prime movies and TV shows.
Mm-hmm. And also the capacity to loan out Kindle books.
Yep, that's something else that comes in Prime. And we'll talk about more of those things when we get to them. But mm-hmm. yeah, and in that holiday season, they announced they sold 108 million items.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they also entered a fulfillment agreement with drugstore.com
wow.
that year.
Yeah.
I had another interesting note in here somewhere, but I can't read.
Well, it's too bad because the clock is ticking. I'm about to go into 2006.
As of that year, they possessed the world's 3 largest Linux databases with capacities of terabytes and terabytes and terabytes.
Yeah. So again, you know, you would sit there and think of like data storage. You might think Google, but Amazon was the big name.
The big name then.
Mm-hmm. In 2006, they launched Amazon Simple Storage Service, or S3.
Mm-hmm.
This is another back-end thing, but it's something that eventually customers would see in another form that's kind of a split off of that. But they made a lot more partnerships with merchants, retailers, and manufacturers. They also launched Amazon Connect, which was a way for authors to reach readers through sort of a blog-like interface, but that would eventually get replaced by what they call author pages.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea was that by giving authors a direct route to communicate with readers, it could enrich the experience. Because we didn't really talk about it. In fact, this is a very important point. But one of the other things that really helped Amazon get through the .com crash is that they had, you know, user reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And user reviews created this rich user experience that made Amazon more of what used to be called Web 2.0.
Mm-hmm. The concept that a community is important online.
Right.
Crazy that.
Web 2.0 has a lot of different definitions to it, but part of it is interactivity
mm-hmm.
And the fact that users are contributors, not just consumers.
Right.
And also that you have dynamic content, meaning that it does change over time. It's not just a landing page you go to and it has, you know, a stock amount of information about mm-hmm. the company. So,
and this was really revolutionary because being able to jump on a website, look at a product that you're thinking about buying and see that someone says, you know, I really liked this shirt, but I got it and the seams ripped in a day and a half. Yeah. And on the other hand, like, this is a terrific thing. I've bought five of them. I've had it forever, and it's wonderful.
Right. Yeah, I've bought them for friends and family for gifts, and everyone loves them, that kind of thing.
And everything in between.
And actually, you know, Bezos has said repeatedly that negative reviews are just as important as positive ones, because it shows that Amazon is dedicated to the consumer side.
Mm-hmm. And I think he came under a little bit of fire at some point from some companies that were saying, why are you letting people post these negative reviews? And he was like, well, because they're true.
Yeah, because your stuff isn't good.
Make better stuff.
Yeah. He points out that to build customer trust, you have to have that. Mm-hmm. It's also one of the reasons why Amazon is very, very keen to get rid of any reviews that are gaming the system.
Right.
Because that does happen. Occasionally you'll have a company, and it might not be the company directly. It might be, say, an outside PR firm comes in and without the company's permission goes in and makes a whole bunch of fake reviews for a product on something like Amazon drive up the rating.
To either positive reviews on their own products or negative reviews on a competitor's product.
Right. So again, this isn't something that necessarily a company is colluding with a PR firm. Some PR firms take it upon themselves. Some companies do this kind of stuff on their own, but Amazon's approach is to try and head that off as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Also in 2006, they launched the Amazon Unbox, which is interesting. This is kind of a predecessor to the instant video stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Unbox, what it would let you do is download a DVD quality film or TV show.
Oh, right, I remember that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now you would download it to your PC and you could watch it on your PC. You could not watch it on anything else, and you could it was not compatible with Macs. It was not compatible with Linux machines, only PCs running Windows, and you could not port it over
transfer
to other devices.
Sure.
Yeah, so you had to actually use the Amazon Unbox video player to watch it. So it's a proprietary video player.
Mm-hmm.
And you might think, well, that's kind of lame, Amazon. This is kind
in 2006.
Well, it's also a restriction that the industry is putting on Amazon, right? Because they definitely do not want you to be able to download a video and either distribute it as much as you like or watch it on whatever you want. They want to control that as much as possible because
of licensing issues, because they make more money
to
download it.
It comes down
to
money. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not entirely Amazon's fault, although, you know, people argue about how much responsibility they have. Thing is true in the publishing industry when we get there.
Oh, of course, yeah. And in 2006, just for perspective, Amazon accounted for 5.1% of the online retail market.
5.1% out of all retail online.
All retail online.
That's huge.
Which is, sounds like a really low number until you think about that the internet was sort of a thing by 2006.
Yeah,
that
was definitely, it was definitely big. Mm-hmm. HowStuffWorks was going strong by 2006. And the next year is when Amazon really comes out with something huge. But before we get there, I think it's important we take just a quick break to thank our sponsor.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
And now back to the show.
So it's 2007. Amazon decides to rock the world, at least the world of publishing, and it releases the Kindle e-reader.
It launched at $399.
Yeah.
Reviews were pretty mixed about it, actually. People weren't sure that this entire electronic book thing was going to be a thing.
Yeah. And there were a lot of people who were, I mean, I was skeptical when launched, because I thought, hey, I really like the feel and the smell of a book.
The tactile experience of a book, absolutely.
And then I eventually got to, hey, I like being able to carry a library without breaking my spine.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, early days it was kind of a question about whether or not they can make it go. And we should point out, I mean, we know this, so you guys who are furiously typing on your laptops, take a moment, or your smartphones or tablets, whatever, take a moment. We know that the Kindle was not the first e-reader.
Right.
It wasn't even the first e-ink e-reader, but it was one that had an enormous company behind it, a company known for distributing books.
Mm-hmm. So and it also had a huge library of e-books already available.
Yeah. So they had a distinct advantage over other companies that sold you the hardware but didn't have access to the actual content.
Mm-hmm.
This is selling you the hardware and the content all in one big company.
Mm-hmm.
So it also opened up huge opportunities for e-publishing, where authors could potentially publish a book themselves in electronic format and skip the entire publishing industry experience altogether. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the book will be a success, but it does mean that a book that might not otherwise be published because it is too risky or too outside the norm,
and just
could
like the rest of the internet has given a huge voice to people who might not otherwise have ever gotten a soapbox,
for good or for ill.
And
commenters, I'm looking at you.
But yeah, it really started shaking things up.
Yeah, definitely, and it would continue to do so over the next few years. I mean, we'll probably do another episode about Amazon's effects
on the industries.
Overall
impact, yeah.
Yeah, because there's a whole lot to be said about the impact of electronic publishing on the publishing industry as a whole, especially when you get into the battles about pricing.
Oh, yeah.
Those got ugly.
Yes, absolutely.
And they're still going on. It's not like it's over, but for a while there, it was hurting everybody.
Right.
Especially authors and fans of certain authors, my wife being one of them. It's a whole Jim Butcher story I'll have to tell when we get to that. But they also that year, 2007, launched a partnership with TiVo. And TiVo, of course, the DVR, for those who forgot, because TiVo was like the name in DVRs for the longest time.
It was, yeah.
It's kind of lost a lot of its luster, mainly because there's so many other devices out there that incorporate DVR technology that TiVo is kind of...
And there's also, a lot of people are getting them straight from their cable provider these days, and so they don't necessarily have a separate branded.
Yeah, and to be fair, also, TiVo has a reputation for not updating its operating system as frequently as people would like.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things. But back in 2007, TiVo was the name. It entered a partnership with Amazon, and Amazon essentially allowed people who subscribed to TiVo access to the Unbox videos. So
cool.
It meant that if you were an Unbox customer, you could get access to thousands of movies and television shows. Mm-hmm. The first quarter sales in 2007 passed $3 billion. That's billion with a B, dollars. Mm-hmm. That's in the first quarter.
Yeah, the entire year that year was $14.8 billion in revenue.
That's a lot of money. So, this is huge. It's huge. Two huge things. First of all, September 2007, they launch a public beta program of their Amazon MP3 program.
Ooh.
So this is Amazon saying, okay, Apple.
Huh.
All right, iTunes.
We see you, iTunes. We see what you're doing there.
Let's go for it. Yeah. And so then you had the MP3 battles between Amazon and Apple, which are still going on today.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that I do a lot of comparison shopping. But then they also purchased the publication rights for a special edition version of a particular author's special book. That book is The Tales of Beetle the Bard. Author is J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, you might have heard her.
Yeah, she wrote those Harry Potter books, you know, the ones where Frodo has to destroy the ring. You Shall Not Pass. I love those books.
I love in the movie, Patrick Stewart is so good.
He is so good, yeah, as Professor X of Dumbledore University. We actually do know our stuff. We're big Harry Potter fans. We're just also enormous dorks. So J.K. Rowling's Tales of Beetle the Bard, which was a special book that she had written that was, you know, connected to the Harry Potter universe, but not actually
within
part of
the
Harry Potter.
Yeah, yeah.
Not part of the actual
story. It's a
story
that shows up in the story.
So yes.
Kind of meta.
Yeah, a little meta. That would not actually go on sale until 2008. Amazon purchased the rights in 2007, but in 2008, they get the rights to actually sell the collector's edition version of the Tales of Beetle the Bard, and that was the most important thing that happened in 2008. they also hit like $4.1 billion in sales in their first quarter. They also acquired a company called Audible. So we've talked about Audible on this podcast before. Acquired a company called Fabric.com.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Costumers
yeah.
out there.
They, if you were following along with our web services conversation earlier, they reached 300,000 developers using their web services.
Yep. They also launched apps on Facebook. So this is again Amazon looking at what is out there, what's working, what are people really getting into, and making sure that they have a presence there.
Mm-hmm.
They've done this with multiple platforms, Facebook being a very important one, but they've also done things with Xbox Live and other companies as well. So, it's one of those things that marks a company that's really on the lookout for what is it that customers want.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're able to continue to meet that, then they're going to be a success. Moving into 2009, this was also an important part, an important time for Amazon, because in 2009 we started to see a dramatic decline in demand for retail space.
Mm-hmm.
This is where retail companies are starting to have serious problems.
Right, right.
Companies like Circuit City and Best Buy and even, you know, companies like Kmart and you're looking at more and more people shifting their shopping experiences to online.
Right.
Bezos has said that nothing is ever going to replace the experience of going out and shopping at a physical location, and that it may just be that becomes more of an event thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be for just specific types of products and services that you would go out to a brick and mortar store.
That's actually absolutely true for me. I mean, if I'm looking for something local or artistic, then I want to go out and kind of look at it and poke at it. But if I'm just buying a DVD, I don't want to go to Best Buy.
Yeah, I'm sort of the same way in that, like the other day, for example, at my house, I have no fewer than four different types of light bulbs because of fixtures in my house. Eventually, I hope to have only need for one type of light bulb, but right now that's not the case. So I had reached a point where I had enough burnt out bulbs that something needed to change, or else I was going to really injure myself while navigating through my house at night. So I went on to, I could have, gone to the store and gone down the light bulb aisle.
Mm-hmm.
This would have had to have been a hardware store, because these are particular specialty types of halogen mm-hmm. bulbs. Yeah. Cause I had to buy one of those fancy modern houses, which I love the house. It's the fixtures that are driving me crazy. So I went on Amazon, way easier.
Yeah.
And with a couple of clicks, I bought a whole bunch of light bulbs so I won't have to go shopping again for a long time. It will be bright at my house for ages to come.
Forever.
Yeah.
But in 2009 also, the Kindle was the top selling item of the holiday season.
Yep. And this is also when a trend called showrooming began. Showrooming is when customers go into a store and they have a smartphone and they use the smartphone to take a picture of a store's product. Yeah.
Yeah, that was there were a few controversies that year. That was also the year that Amazon ended up deleting George Orwell's 1984 from a whole bunch of Kindles because they realized that the copy that they had in their store was actually an illegal copy.
Right.
That was only approved for sale in Australia, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was definitely the problem was that they could sell George Orwell's 1984, but the version they sold, this is kind of weird because it's the same words. But
this is a publishing industry thing. Yeah. I mean, you know, every publishing company is very proprietary about these sort of things and with good reason because that's how they make their dollars. But
yeah, when you consider the content of 1984 and the fact that that was the book that gets deleted.
Yeah, I liked that a whole lot.
And it was something that happened that, you know, this actually required a response from Amazon to customers because it happened so suddenly and without warning, really. Mm-hmm. You know, people just wake up one day and one of their titles is deleted.
It's gone.
It raised the question of, hey, own it? Because I bought a copy.
Yeah, and the thing is that you technically do not own that book that you own that you have on your Kindle. You own the rights to read it.
Yeah.
Right now. It's more like renting a book, honestly, the way that it's worded.
Yeah, and when you think about it, that's worrisome because you think, well, could that rental agreement end someday and suddenly I don't have that book anymore? I mean,
and the answer is yes.
So, you know, that's one of the big differences between an electronic book and a real book, because it would be a much different story if Amazon employees kicked open your door and walked to your bookshelf and took a physical copy of George Orwell's 1984 and said, see ya, here's a receipt for your receipt, and walked out. That was a reference to the documentary Brazil. Anyway, moving on. Showrooming, the whole idea about comparison shopping while you're actually in a physical space, you end up taking the picture of the code on the box or whatever and, get a quick look to see, okay, well, here's this one product in this store. What is it on Amazon? And do I want to just order it online? That has driven stores nuts. And in fact, some stores, for example, I'm pretty sure Target for 2013 has a policy where it will match Amazon's price for products.
Wow, that's very clever.
So it's become kind of a battle between Amazon and traditional retail stores.
Mm-hmm.
Moving into 2009, they announced the fourth quarter sales for 2008. This happens in early 2009, obviously, or like each year at the beginning of the year. Once you get into the year, companies announce the results of their last quarter because obviously they can't do it during the actual year that it happened because it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
The fourth quarter sales for 2008 were announced at the beginning of 2009 and they were $6.7 billion. So still making huge sales. And of course, part of this is because Amazon's selling more and more stuff, just different kinds of stuff, not just books and music and movies. They also introduced the Kindle 2. And they introduced shopping apps for Android and the Kindle app for iOS devices. And they acquired a company called Zappos, which made a lot of my friends unhappy. Because they loved Zappos and they loved its independent spirit. And they were worried that that would go away once it was acquired by a giant like Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Or that it would just be incorporated into Amazon and Zappos as a thing would no longer exist.
Right.
Yeah. Something else that's interesting at this point, one of the reasons why the Kindle was so important to Amazon is we were talking about profit margins earlier, about how expensive it is to run a business like Amazon. You're talking about huge infrastructure, lots of warehouses, lots of employees.
Lots of computer equipment, shipping.
Yeah, lots and lots of stuff you have to worry about. With Kindle, it's an electronic file, so you pay for the equipment that it's stored on and the infrastructure that supports that equipment, but you don't have to worry about shipping. You don't have to worry about all those other problems. It's much cheaper to get electronic
book to someone than it is to get a physical book. You know, for example, George R. R. Martin's Dance with the Dragons weighs approximately what I do.
Yeah,
so when you
true.
Have to ship
that's
that
true.
To somebody.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Often I confuse Lauren with the book I'm currently reading, and I now realize that when I hear Put Me Down, I've accidentally picked up Lauren.
It's awkward.
Yeah, HR has talked to me. So, yeah, it's true also with other forms of digital files, obviously, MP3s and instant streaming movies, that kind of thing. So Amazon's really helping it. You know, the company is doing well in part because people are buying more and more of the electronic versions of stuff as opposed to the physical thing.
Mm-hmm.
Although they're still buying the physical thing, too. I mean, that hasn't changed. In 2010, they announced their fourth quarter sales for 2009, which was $9.5 billion.
Oh, wow.
The other thing to keep in mind is the fourth quarter tends to be Amazon's best quarter.
Of course, because Christmas happens,
yeah.
holiday shopping, and it's always any retailer's biggest quarter.
Yeah, and keep in mind also, Amazon, while it's making these amazing sales, sometimes those profit margins aren't so great simply because Amazon's also cutting prices.
Right.
So they're
actually really big on cutting prices.
Yeah.
They're, you know, it's one of the things, one of the reasons that a lot of other physical big box stores have been driven out of business in contribution by Amazon.
Right. Yeah. So you've got – that's something that some critics are upset about with Amazon mm-hmm. because they feel, one, that you know it's slowly making Amazon a monopoly mm-hmm. in many industries. And two, it is it hurts shareholders in the sense that Amazon could be making more money if they charged more for stuff.
If they charged more, right.
But then the counter argument to that is, well, if you charge more for stuff, fewer people buy it.
Right.
So what's the right balance?
Yeah, and interestingly, they've also applied the same concept to their web services, which is a huge part of their business. That again is the infrastructure that they rent out to other companies.
Yeah.
For use, and prices of those services were dropping pretty dramatically as they streamlined that around the 2010 sort of time period.
Yep.
Also that year, the sale of ebooks surpassed hardcover sales in July.
Yeah, which that would become, you know, pretty much par for the course from that point out. They would sell more Kindle copies of books than physical copies of books.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not necessarily true across all businesses.
Right.
And that's not to say that there are now more digital copies of books being sold than hard copies everywhere. It's simply for Amazon in particular.
Simply within that store, yes.
Yeah. So now granted, Amazon's big distributor
of
books, so
yeah.
it's a big story.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Yeah. They also launched Amazon Studios in 2010. And this is Amazon's attempt to get into content creation. It's an idea where they partner with content creators, writers, mm-hmm. who are writing movie scripts or television scripts that normally would not get turned into actual movies or TV shows because Hollywood is insular and there's, mm-hmm. it's really hard to break into it, right? I mean, you hear like the amazing stories that happened where someone gets discovered, like a writer, right. a writer suddenly gets discovered in Hollywood. But for every one story you hear, there's 1,000 heartbreak stories uh-huh. of people who have the best idea, but no one will listen to
them. No one will buy it. Yeah.
So this is kind of Amazon's approach to letting content creators get a chance at seeing their stuff come to life. So in order to be part of it, you have to actually create an account and submit stuff. And mm-hmm. they have very specific, parameters that you have to fit within in order to be part of it. So it's not like you just send in a script and you're good to go. There's more to it.
Sure.
That.
It's a little bit more complicated than their Kindle self-publishing yeah. model, or not Kindle, but ebook self-publishing model.
Right. And then Amazon also invested $175 million in a company called Living Social.
Uh-huh.
So this is Amazon's attempt to get in on a game that looked like it was threatening companies like Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So companies like GroupMe and Living Social, which have these special deals, usually they're regional deals that apply to you if you happen to live within a certain area, and you get merchants or service providers or whatever will enter into an agreement where you get for a reduced price. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
essentially a voucher for something.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time where people were genuinely concerned that these companies would topple retail establishments or at least really hurt the bottom line. But it turned out that it's really hard to make money with that business model. So this might be one of those sort of missteps where Amazon makes
– was perhaps not – yeah. Maybe
it wasn't the best idea. In 2011, they reached $17 billion in sales.
Oof.
That's a lot of money. They also released the Kindle Fire tablet, which, it was a strong competitor because it was, seen as, a tablet device that could compete with the iPad, not, spec for spec,
but it was in color, it was a touch screen.
And it was way cheaper.
Yeah, way cheaper than the iPad. I mean, I think at the time the iPad was still
It's like $550 or something like that.
Right,
like,
and the Fire debuted, I think, at about $200. I want to say that is, I'm making that up, but I feel like
it was a couple of $100 less mm-hmm. than the iPad was, and it was seen as such a low cost alternative that a lot of people who wanted a tablet but didn't want to invest that much money in an iPad mm-hmm. Decided to give it a try. And also, I mean, it was a smart idea for Amazon because, again, the tablet essentially acts as a portal for all of Amazon's content.
Right.
So everything Amazon sells works really well on the Amazon Kindle Fire.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, when you think about it, The tablet, they were selling those essentially either at cost or even at a loss in order to
sell you more ebooks and more video and music downloads.
Exactly, yeah. They're like, well, we'll make it up in content, which, again, because it's digital content, has a much lower cost of distribution than physical stuff.
Oh,
this way we are bringing about the digital revolution and we will make so much money.
Yeah, yes. And for perspective, Borders, that was 2011 was the year that Borders announced their complete liquidation. So,
sad trombone.
Yeah, no, total sad trombone.
That was also the year they introduced Prime Instant Videos, so you could stream certain videos if you were a Prime member. You could also rent or buy videos
mm-hmm.
Through Instant Prime as well, so you could watch those for a fee. But there were lots of them that were available free for Prime users to watch. So again, Prime is a subscription service, so you had to pay into it first, but you could watch all these other things for free once you were a member. They also introduced Amazon Cloud Drive and Cloud Player. So this was the customer facing. This is when you and I could end up taking advantage of Amazon's storage space online.
Mm-hmm.
And also you could buy digital albums. They would get stored in your cloud drive. You could upload stuff to the cloud drive, but there was a certain limit, like a certain number of gigabytes of stuff you could upload. But
once it was in there.
Yeah, you're good to go. You could listen to it
from anywhere,
any device that could connect to it. But also if you bought it directly from Amazon, it did not count against your limit. So if you bought,
if you bought
a full album from Amazon, you would get upgraded to the next level of the cloud service. So it gave you an incentive again to shop through Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like, you know, they were just being altruistic. They had a good reason to do this. They also announced MyHabit.com, which, those personalized shopping services.
Oh, yeah. I vaguely remember that.
I occasionally get emails from them that I look at and I think, I am not nearly attractive enough to wear that clothing. They then began to they launched Amazon Local, which, again, very regionalized kind of a service. And they also they had the Amazon Silk web browser, which was part of Amazon Fire.
Right.
That was shown as being really fast, but some people had some issues with it. They introduced the Kindle Owners Lending Library, where you could borrow books on your Kindle and not have to buy them if you wanted to just read it, which was kind of cool. Again, that was one of those things that you had to be a Prime member.
Yeah, that was a Prime perk. But.
Yeah. Moving into 2012, that's when they released the Kindle Fire HD.
Mm-hmm.
They acquired Kiva Systems Incorporated. Do you know Kiva Systems?
Yeah, that's the nonprofit. That's the opposite of nonprofit.
Kiva was. I know where you're going, but it's a different company.
Yes,
I'm going to put you out of your misery.
Excellent.
Kiva is a company that makes robots.
Robots. We like those.
Yeah, these are the ones that made the automated material handling system.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Yes.
So, when an order comes in, the robot goes and picks up the appropriate shelf it picks up the entire shelf. The shelves are designed so that they are the same dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're the same dimensions as the robot. So the robot, because everything belongs on its own shelf and every shelf belongs in a specific spot within the warehouse, the robot goes to the right spot. I'm going to keep saying it that way. No, I'm going to get lots of emails. I'm going to stop. So the robot goes to that spot and then uses a screwdriver to lift the top of the robot. So from the perspective of the shelf, the top of the robot is not moving at all. But the robot ends up using the screwdriver to lift the top of this platform that goes from the robot up until it hits the bottom of the shelf, lifts the shelf up. So now the robot is physically lifting the shelf off the floor.
Okay.
And then the robot wheels the entire shelf over to the packing area where a human being grabs the product off the shelf and takes it to pack it up. Meanwhile, the robot returns the shelf to the appropriate place in the warehouse.
Wow.
There are hundreds of robots in these warehouses, and they're all working independently and interdependently with each other so that they don't collide. The system knows where every robot is, and every robot knows where every robot is. So they move in this incredibly efficient manner and make it way easier for fewer people to pack more stuff in a warehouse and fulfill those Amazon.com orders.
Yeah.
So it's kind of awesome to see. And then at the same time, you think, robots are going to take all our jobs.
Well, at the same time, I mean, I've read there's been a couple really good essays that have been published. I think the one, it was called I Was a Warehouse Wage Slave.
Mm.
It was excellent. It published on Mother Jones. And just detail this one journalist's inside experience of working for that kind of giant amalgamated shipping website thing, and you know, the sort of mandatory overtime, 12-hour days, 5 days a week, 15-minute breaks.
Yeah, you'd have to imagine that during the holidays, it's got to be particularly hellish.
It's not good. Yeah, and you know, getting fired for things like taking a day off.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah. Robots, as it turned out, do not need very many coffee breaks, and they rarely take days off unless they're no longer running.
They complain less about having to run 15 miles a day across a warehouse floor.
Yeah, but they will eventually override us and enslave us. That year, 2012, last year as mm-hmm. of the recording of this podcast. Mm-hmm. They also had Amazon Studios announce that it was going to develop series exclusively for Amazon Instant Video, which kind of puts it on par with Netflix, which is also, you know, developing content exclusively for Netflix.
Right.
So with Netflix, you've got like the big title that has me excited is Arrested Development.
Yes,
Arrested Development's coming
so
back.
So exciting.
New season on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Well, Amazon is looking into creating the content that it was soliciting with Amazon Studios into these various series and movies, offering them on Amazon Instant Video. And the idea is that this will give you the option to see stuff that you otherwise never would get a chance
we'll
to
see. We'll get a chance to see, right.
And hopefully some of it will be amazing. I'm sure quite a few titles will end up being really interesting and mm-hmm. exciting to watch. And I say that knowing that the majority of the stuff I come across on Netflix is not.
And what's interesting about this competition, actually, is that Netflix uses Amazon's web services to run. I think that they're one of their larger clients.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's an interesting experience to see the competitor using your own service. Mm-hmm. And then moving up to our current year, 2013, the only note I wrote down is that the current stock price as of the recording of this podcast and just before we came in here was around $264 a share. So if you remember when we started this podcast, it was down to just under $6 per share. It's back up to $264 per share. It has not split since the .com crash.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
But there was a long time where the stock price was in the $10 to $20 per share range. And then over the last few years, especially as the e-publishing stuff started taking off, the value of the company has gone up quite a bit. So it's an interesting story. I mean, they were way on top before the .com crash. They went, you know, as far as the market value of the company went, they sunk pretty low and then they rose back up.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interestingly, a lot of during the fourth quarter of 2012, 39% of the units sold on Amazon were by third party sellers. So they're kind of starting to move away from selling things themselves.
Yeah, they become like a almost, you know, a middleman.
Yeah, a platform for selling things.
Which makes sense. Amazon has a huge reach. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense from a merchant standpoint because you're going to reach way more potential customers than you would with your own site. Because, you know, that requires people actually know about you before they, you know, start shopping. This way they can find out about your stuff on Amazon. And fewer people... this is anecdotal. I shouldn't say this is not scientific. Anecdotally, I know that from my group of friends, few people don't really care where the product they buy comes from when they buy it on Amazon.
Right.
They're not looking at the name of the vendor. They're looking at, oh, here's the thing. Here's how much it costs. Here's if it's a Prime eligible
thing. One click buy.
Give me that thing that I want.
Uh-huh.
I've got a little bit. Here's another kind of interesting fact. So during the time that Steve Jobs came back to Apple, mm-hmm. you know, he was forced out of the company, came back in the mid 90s, brought Apple back from the brink of bankruptcy to great success. Investors achieved a return of 66.8 times their money that they invested. During Jeff Bezos' tenure at Amazon, mm-hmm. shareholders achieved a return of 124.3 times their money.
Wow.
Yeah. So nearly twice as much.
Oh my goodness.
It's which is one of those reasons why a lot of like Forbes has called Bezos the best performing CEO ever.
Wow.
At least of this current mm-hmm. era. And that, and that's the reason why is because of stuff like that. And Bezos, his philosophy is very interesting. If you were to ask Bezos about the competitors to Amazon, mm-hmm. he doesn't talk about them at all. He does not acknowledge them,
uh-huh.
like no matter which industry you're talking about. And his philosophy is, this is a quote from him, whatever your set of competitors is today is transitory. You'd have to change your strategy all the time.
Yeah.
So his view is that you just got to do what you do as well as you possibly can. And don't pay any mind to the competitors because that's just a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's an incredible story. It's a pretty amazing company, in that, you know, you look at the rise and fall and rise again. I'm curious to see what goes on in the future, because like you said, they could potentially get out of the whole, why do we have this warehouse thing and just be like a middleman.
Right. Right. Yeah. They're already doing that for so many corporations with their infrastructure that their web services are a multi-billion dollar business at this point.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's where a lot of the value of the company is coming from. That and the digital products are really shaping the world as we know it. So, we'll probably do an episode that kind of talks more in detail about Amazon's impact. Maybe we'll split it up a little bit and give you some other episodes first so that you're not Amazoned out all at once, or Amazoned, as I like to say.
Amazoned.
As I just invented.
You just did that thing. Yeah, that was a thing that just happened. Guys.
Okay, so let's wrap this up. Guys, if you have any suggestions for future episodes of Tech Stuff, I highly recommend you let us know in an email. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com, or drop us a line on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle at both those locations is TechStuffHSW, and Lauren and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.